and I have no relationships to disclose. Okay, so my talk is about on case crossover study of laceration injuries in meatpacking. I will describe the types of injuries and some demographic variables and focus on transient occupational exposures associated with these laceration injuries. So just briefly some background. Traumatic occupational injuries result in significant burden in terms of injury, disability, and fatalities. Every year, approximately 6,000 workers die. Over 4 million experience non-fatal injuries and illnesses, and over 9,000 are treated in emergency rooms. Meatpacking industry is one of the largest in the United States. It employs over 500,000 workers. The rate of non-fatal injuries and illnesses is three times as high as in private industries, and injuries in meatpacking also tend to be more severe with longer number of days away from work for each injury. A relatively recent study looked at existing data in one meatpacking plant and found higher injury rates for younger workers and also for African American and Native American workers. So there are some differences by demographic groups. They also looked at plant location, and we see that not all jobs are created equal in the meatpacking plant, and the slaughter operation, or harvest as they called it here, had the highest injury rates. So these demographic factors and work location are useful to describe groups at high injuries, but they're not amenable to preventive interventions. What is more interesting to look at are these transient risk factors, and these are things that change over the course of the shift or even during the course of the hour. So one study conducted by Gary Sorok, Dave Lombardi, looked in 2001, looked at occupational injuries and the incidence of occupational hand injuries associated with these transient risk factors, so things that change over time. And they saw that the risk of occupational hand injury increases with either malfunctioning equipment, using unusual work method, performing unusual task. So these transient risk factors are more amenable to interventions. And we wanted to see whether this was also true for laceration injuries in meatpacking. So our study was done in two plants, one in Crete, Nebraska, one in Denison, Iowa. The Crete plant is a little larger with just under 2,000 workers. Both plants are unionized with UFCW. Operations are conducted in two shifts, the main slaughter operations occurring in the first shift, 6 to 4 p.m., and the majority of fabrication and cutting in the second shift with cleanup occurring during the night. Production is divided into two sides. On the hot side, slaughter occurs, and on the cold side, additional fabrication and preparation for shipping happens. So if we look at this horizontal line and think of it as a time frame, and the laceration injury occurs at a certain point in time, we compared exposures immediately before these injuries to exposures in the previous work week. So each worker served as their own control, since this was a case crossover study. So our control periods were the previous work week. So all production workers were eligible. We excluded loading dock and office workers. Injured workers were recruited right after treatment, and consent was obtained over the phone. They were called within 2 weeks and interviewed about their exposures. And the interviews were conducted in English and Spanish. So these were our transient exposures of interest: knife sharpening, performing unusual task, equipment malfunction, unusual work method, and more worker-related factors such as being tired, rushing, being distracted, and slipping and falling. And I have some pictures next, just there. So this is a picture from the hot production sites. The hogs are suspended from the ceiling, and it's a conveyor-paced work. So each worker has to perform their operation when that piece of product is in front of them. They all wear hard hats and hearing protection, as you can see here. Some workers work on this elevated platform, so the yellow floor is actually an elevated platform. this worker is using this large circular pneumatic saw to split spines. And this operation is particularly messy, as you can see on the floor. So to contrast that with the cold production side, the work is conveyor paced. So since it's a smaller pieces of product and the worker is performing their task when that piece of product is in front of them, just to point out some PPE, the worker in the middle has a plastic belly guard. Since he's performing cuts towards the body, it's designed to protect the torso. You can see the gloves, and they stand fairly close together. Since we're dealing with a frozen product, some tasks are very intensive in terms of force that's required. This person is not posing for pictures. He's just using that much force to do the work. So our sample included 295 workers. On average, they were about 37 years of age. 26% had grade school education, and 22% had some college or university degrees. 25% were female, and 48% were Hispanic. We asked workers about their upper extremity symptoms in the previous work week, and 17% reported that they had some sort of pain, numbness, or tingling in the previous work week. We always talk about high turnover rate in meatpacking, and here we saw 30% was less than 1 year at the plant, and 33% was over 4 years, so it varied. Interestingly, 10% reported no safety training at all before they started the work. We were interested to see the types of PPE items, and they're listed in the first column that are worn in the plant. So we asked what was required for your job, because obviously it would vary by different tasks. And then what were you actually using out of your required PPE items? Were you actually using what were you supposed to use? So for example, for usable gloves, 96 workers were required to wear them for the task, so that's the last column. But 71 workers actually wore those. So the usage of the required PPE varied. And the percentages were fairly high. The lowest was 60% of workers for metal mesh gloves. So 60% of workers who were required to wear metal mesh gloves actually wore them in injury time. And the highest usage was for metal mesh apron at 79%. So where did the injuries occur to? 3% were to the head region. The majority, as expected, were to fingers at 70%. 22 were to upper extremities, and 4% to lower extremities. And what were the sources of injuries? So these were identified by workers as the main contributing factor to the injuries. Surprisingly, only 30% were some sort of knives. The rest were hooks, saws, scissors, different machines, some steel edges, like steel container edge, plastic strap, edge of step, even bathroom sign, and random metal pieces as well, including a mesh glove that had a nick in it. So there was a large variety in sources of injury. So this table shows relative risk of laceration injuries. We have our transient exposure in the first column, then the number of workers who reported that exposure just before the injury. So 44 workers reported that they were sharpening their tools just before they got injured. We then asked about usual frequency of exposure. So on average in the previous work week, they were sharpening for 2.1 hours. And the last column is the relative risk. So the relative risk for laceration injury associated with sharpening was 5.3 in our study. The relative risk was also 5.3 for equipment malfunction, 4.1 for using unusual work method, and 2.3 for performing unusual task. And all of these were significant. Okay. For being tired and distracted, relative risk were slightly elevated, but not statistically significant at 1.2 and 1.1. Rushing appeared protective at 0.8, and the risk associated with experiencing a fall or slipping were very elevated, but the number of workers who reported those exposures was very small at 10 workers each. So we also asked workers to tell us why their equipment malfunctioned. So for each transient exposure, we ask for more descriptive information. So for malfunctioning equipment, workers reported jamming, dull tools, new equipment, some other malfunction. For unusual work method, it was new equipment, line speed, different equipment or location on the line, being new at the job, cleaning even. For unusual task, job rotation or replacing another employee, maintenance or repair, unjamming, or pushing or pulling product or containers. And these are the reasons for rushing. So mainly line speed, getting ready to leave, either to go home or on a break, pressure from others, setting up cleanup, or unfamiliar task. For being distracted, it was some internal things like thinking or being tired, looking around or noise, talking to coworkers, and line speed. So I'd like to point out some study limitations. Of course, since this is a case crossover study, fixed risk factors could only be evaluated as effect modifiers. There could be some residual within-person confounding, and we see this in some of those descriptive answers. So for co-occurring transient risk factors, some residual confounding could occur. We did not ask about alcohol, medication intake, or emotional factors. And just to summarize, we saw increased risk of laceration injuries associated with sharpening tool, equipment malfunction, using unusual work methods, performing unusual tasks, and being tired and slipping and falling. And we're currently developing intervention efforts, including some engineering controls, improved PPE, administrative controls, and modified safety training. Dr. Smith.
In our presentation, I just have a question about when you look at your exposure period for the time that they got the injury, what kind of time window do you use? Because you had time that they were exposed to in the control period. Did you pick a rationale for deciding that?
So hazard period was just before the injury, and that's how all the questions were phrased. So just before the injury, were you rushing?
And for the analysis, and the
for some of those things, yes, and I don't have it off the top of my head, but it was based on my observation at the plant and talking to supervisors. So for example, for sharpening, we assumed that each time that they reported that there was sharpening, that it took 2 seconds. And I did different sensitivity analysis to look at the effect of changing that time period, and the results were about the same. That's an excellent question.
Well, thank you for attending this session. Have a great day. Thank you.